Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. My name's Amy Lansky, and I'm doing a pre-recorded broadcast this month because I'm going to be doing an interview with Erica McPhee. I wanted to apologize to many of you because I was not here from the February broadcast. It had to be canceled this month, last month, because I was unexpectedly called to be with my mother in Buffalo, New York, when she had to go into the hospital. So she's doing a bit better, but she is almost 91 years old, so it was good to be with her, and I had to spend the whole month of February in Buffalo. But I'm back, and it's, as when you hear this, it will be St. Patrick's Day, so happy St. Patrick's Day. So as many of you know, this is a monthly show that airs the third Friday of each month, and its focus is on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. And as I had promised for last month and now this month, today's program is going to be a special interview with Erica McPhee. She's the mom of a boy, Caden, who has recovered completely from autism, just like my own son, Max. And in some ways, in many ways, her story is even more impressive than Max's recovery story, because Caden was even more severely impacted by autism than Max was. In fact, some of you have listened to my entire show might remember on my very first show, I read some testimonials at the end of the show, and Erica's was one of them. So I'll move on now to a little bit of current events before we begin. Well, like I said, happy St. Patrick's Day. And like last month, it was actually going to be Valentine's Day. And I was going to tell you all, and I'll tell you now, that you should, in celebration of the holiday, consider giving your loved ones the gift of homeopathy. Give them a copy of my book. That would be great. Or, you know, enable them to go visit homeopath and get some homeopathic treatment to improve their health. It's never a bad time to start working on improving your health and lowering your susceptibility to disease. It's also time to start thinking about the yearly NCH conference, the National Center for Homeopathy Conference. And it's coming up very soon, but it's not too late to register. This year, it is the weekend of April 8th and 9th, and it's being held in San Jose, California. And this year is a very special conference for several reasons. One of the most important is that we're calling it the first National Joint Conference on Homeopathy. It's the first time all of the different professional organizations, the professional homeopaths who are unlicensed practitioners, as well as the MDs and naturopaths, we're all getting together, those who practice homeopathy, in one joint national conference. So that's a very exciting development, and will continue next year as well. And another interesting thing about this year's conference is that it has a special focus on the treatment of children. The title of the conference is Homeopathy in Pediatrics and Family Care. Now, the conference is always split into two tracks, a general conference for the general public. Of course, homeopaths attend that as well, or the advanced conference, mostly geared for practitioners. And just to give you some examples of titles, some of the talks in the general conference, there's Ed Schultz, who just came out with a new book you can find on Amazon on homeopathic treatment for the family. He's talking about easy homeopathy for parents. There's a talk on dealing with trauma in children. Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, whose books I have talked about, is talking about her newest book, which is The Treatment of Kids with Asperger Syndrome. Richard Pitt is going to be talking about the significance of the parental relationship in homeopathic prescribing. And there's going to be a talk interesting to many of you on mercury toxicity and detox by Joel Kreisberg. Let's see. And I think there's, oh yes, there's Randy Neustetter, who's a well-known figure in the vaccination debate. He wrote an excellent book about vaccine choices. He's going to give a talk about choosing the correct child's remedy at different developmental stages. So as you can see, there's going to be a really interesting and special focus on children at this conference. And you, whether you're a homeopath or a parent, are welcome to attend. So if you're interested in finding out more, just go to the website of the National Center for Homeopathy, which is homeopathic.org, homeopathic.org. And actually now a new URL is also working for the National Center. It's nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. That also will point to the website. Okay, and of course, I always encourage you all to join the National Center. If you do, you get a subscription to their wonderful magazine, Homeopathy Today, which is really chock full of information, especially for parents, and discounts on things like the conference and other tons of other benefits. Including access to special features on the website like Homeopathy Today Online, monthly chats, and those benefits are going to be growing more and more. Just read all up about it on the website. Okay, and also, once again, I want to encourage you all, if you're listening to the show, to buy my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. As I say every month, this show is mostly being constructed as a sort of a short course based on this book. And so I really encourage everybody to buy and read it, because it really will answer most of your questions about homeopathy. It's one of the premier patient education books in the country, and it's even available in German now, too. You can find out about it on the book website, impossiblecure.com. Also on that site, you will find past archives of this show, and that's a great way to get a sort of a short course, free short course on homeopathy. Go to the impossiblecure.com website, and you will find links to the initial shows, which aren't archived anymore on Autism One, as well as a pointer to the more recent archives of the more recent shows, which are still on the Autism One radio archives. And I especially encourage many of you to listen to last year's February and March shows. The February show describes my own son's recovery from autism, and the March show is an introductory class talk on homeopathic philosophy, which is very important, really, to understand if you're undergoing homeopathic treatment. Now, like I said, this month I'm going to be talking to another autism recovery mom, Erica McPhee, who lives in Maine. And next month I'm going to begin a sequence of probably two, maybe even three shows on the science of homeopathy, about medical studies that show the effectiveness of homeopathic treatment, as well as discussion of various kinds of scientific research that may point to some kind of understanding how homeopathic remedies may be working, as well as a discussion of homeopathic theories about how homeopaths themselves understand how the remedies work. And it's interesting, I'll also probably report, my next show will be after the NCH conference. Preceding the conference on the Friday before the conference begins is a one-day workshop on scientific studies of homeopathy, in which I'll probably be going to, and I'll kind of report on what I find out there as well. So, okay, well, it's time now to move on to our interview with Erica McPhee. Okay, we're here with Erica McPhee, who lives in Maine. And before we start, I wanted to let you all know also about Erica's website. It's recoveredfromautism.com, and it's a really amazing website. It's very comprehensive. It talks about the recovery of her son and pointers to various therapies she used, and including diets and supplements and a very detailed log of improvement of her son. So it's a really great thing. You should all check it out. And actually, there's pointers to it on the ImpossibleCure.com website as well. So welcome, Erica.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So both you and I, both of us are sort of dedicated to letting people know what helped our sons recover.
Absolutely.
So that's why we're both doing this. So why don't we begin by telling me about Caden's journey, about your family's journey.
Sure. Caden was born a very healthy baby, 9 pounds, 10 ounces. Very happy. Started sleeping through the night at about 6 to 7 weeks old. Was nursing really well, gaining really well. He was in the 95th to 100 percentile. And at 9 weeks old, he had his first round of immunizations. And I did have some concern because we do have a family history of reactions to vaccines. I had a reaction to an MMR revax when I was in college. My daughter got the measles after her MMR shot and began with sensory integration type issues. And my brother had also had a reaction to an MMR shot as a child and lost his hearing as a result of that. And my father had a reaction and so on and so forth. So I was very hesitant, and I also had read some information. Unfortunately, the Internet wasn't what it is today, and I couldn't find enough information to really substantiate anything other than I knew intuitively that it wasn't going to be the right thing to do. So we decided to go ahead and vaccinate Caden after his doctor spent about 30 minutes talking us into it and telling us it was safe and telling us the vaccines no longer had thimerosal, which I did specifically ask about. And Caden had a severe reaction after that first round from literally an hour after the shot. He was just screaming and screaming and screaming, and he ended up developing severe reflux, and he would aspirate. A few occasions he stopped breathing. He developed severe food allergies. He started losing weight. He stopped nursing really well. He stopped all babbling sounds, and he stopped sleeping. I mean, we literally would sleep about 2 hours, if that, a night, and he would only sleep if he was sitting up on me. And so things just got progressively worse, and I went back to the doctors again and again, and he stopped having bowel movements, and I went back to the doctor finally because it had been a little over 2 weeks since he'd had a bowel movement, and he started spitting out bile, and it was then that they started taking me seriously and realized that there was something seriously wrong with him. Long story short, we ended up changing doctors, and we found out that his vaccine still did have thimerosal. This was in September of 2001, and we did some blood work and found out that he did have mercury toxicity. He also had tetanus titers, which were 3 times what's considered immune after just the first shot, and they're supposed to receive 4 boosters in total. So he had a lot of similar symptoms to non-lockjaw tetanus, which I know there are some similarities between that and autism. He also did have high arsenic, so he had an issue with heavy metals. And as he got older, we started seeing more and more autistic-like symptoms develop, but I mean, as early as 4.5 months, we were starting to see some issues where, again, he'd stop babbling, he stopped having eye contact, and just really his health just went completely downhill. He dropped off the weight charts, and when he was 5.5 months, he started crawling, which was a very early age, but he also started head banging as soon as he could crawl. And then as he got older, he started doing more of the stereotypical autistic symptoms. He would spin, he would headbang, he would walk on his tiptoes when he eventually started walking, he would lick things, he never pointed to anything, he did not play with toys, he did not interact with other children, he was nonverbal, a lot of the symptoms that you think of for autism. At the same time, I was doing my own little self-discovery journey with the food issue because I realized very early on that dairy was bothering him, and it had bothered my daughter as well. She had chronic ear infections, and so I took him off dairy at a very young age, at I think 4 to 4.5 months, somewhere around there. And that seemed to help, but not tremendous improvements. You know, he still was developing symptoms. And then we took him off soy, and we saw a little bit more improvement. And then we took him off wheat. He was 12 months old. We saw big improvements after we removed the wheat. He had all over body eczema, all over body hives, was doing a lot of aggressive behaviors, a lot of headbutting me in the face, a lot of kicking, a lot of aggressive tantrums, and didn't take him out anywhere, you know, couldn't go places, had stopped having play dates and that kind of thing. And I think probably by the time he was 18 months is when we saw the worst of his symptoms. And it was right about that time that we started doing homeopathy as well. And I found Nancy Frederick, who is our homeopath, online. And as it turned out, as fate would have it, her office was less than a mile from my home. Hmm. And we went in and saw Nancy, and we started our first remedy, and we saw improvements pretty quickly. Nothing dramatic, but I started noticing. One day I took him to the grocery store, and he pointed, and he said, you know, he pointed up to things and was kind of looking around like he was noticing things for the first time, and he pointed out another child and kind of waved, and I was so excited because it was the first time he'd really shown an interest in other kids. And at that point, too, he started playing with toys more and started interacting a little bit more with his environment. But it wasn't until he had his first dose of DPT remedy that we saw dramatic improvements. And we did doses fairly infrequently. For the first two doses were roughly 6 months apart. By the time he was 27 months old, he was still nonverbal, but he had learned sign language and could sign about 50 different signs, so he could communicate that way. His receptive language was very much improved, and we also were doing DMG supplements. And he was doing much, much better, but still autistic, you know, still wasn't interacting a whole lot, still wasn't speaking. At 27 months, we did another dose of remedy, and it was absolutely dramatic. Within a week, he had potty trained himself. He was speaking in full sentences. He was dressing himself, and he had never before put on or taken off an article of clothing. So that was pretty impressive. And virtually, we saw the majority of his symptoms go away. And he was, at the time, receiving therapy. He was doing speech, developmental, and occupational therapy. He did have a phenol issue, so he had kind of a drunken sailor gait and low muscle tone. We saw that definitely improve. And he lost services within a month and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. His therapist said if they hadn't seen it with their own eyes, they wouldn't have believed it. Because both of them really believed up to the point there was no connection between diet, there was no connection between his vaccinations, and didn't know anything about homeopathy, which I didn't either. But the changes were just undeniable and absolutely phenomenal.
That's good. You know, it's very interesting because I've heard that the kids who are sensitive to wheat are more likely the ones damaged by DPT.
Interesting.
And that was the remedy, you know, that was the one.
Yeah,
obviously
it
was. Whereas the MMR kids are more milk sensitive.
Okay, which would make sense because my daughter, who is now 8, did develop ADD-like symptoms. And she had all the issues with the dairy, and she had had the measles after the MMR vaccine.
Right.
And the sensory integration issues. And we have finally found a remedy for her, which has worked marvelously. And it took us a number of years to find a good fit for her, which can get frustrating, but definitely worth the wait because she has just really blossomed this year and is doing fantastic. So
that's a good reminder to parents, too. Sometimes even the best homeopath takes a while to find the right remedy.
Yep, definitely. And you know, we tried a few, and the first ones we didn't see good results, and then finally we found one that just hit the mark, and she took off from there. So Caden, on the other hand, he is now 4.5. He attends a traditional preschool, no mention of autism. He has gone off the diet. We have been doing NAIT therapy as well, and he has been able to a regular diet since last July. We have seen absolutely no symptoms at all. Very, very healthy child, very, very happy, very bright. He's beginning to read. His teacher tells me he's a star pupil. So just a really happy social kid. He plays with lots of different friends. And he's a very, very sweet, gentle child. I mean, just the complete opposite from where we came from. We have not given him another remedy yet. He does still dose occasionally with the DPT remedy if I see his behavior. Not that I see any autistic symptoms, but if I see him a little bit off.
Right.
Which is kind of hard to explain, but, I mean, you know it when you see it, that he's, you know, maybe he's losing attention a little bit, or I can see just that he's not really on, you know, and I'll redose him, and he'll go back. And
how often is that? I'm just curious.
Not very often. I would say probably once every couple of months.
Okay.
And occasionally we did see some antidoting. We went on a field trip, and they had done this thing where they put peppermint on the trees, and he antidoted his remedy, and it was very clear right away. He got very hyper, and we saw a teeny, weeny bit of stimming. This was last year, so it was a while ago even still. But he does do some antidoting, so if he has any type of mint, then we'll redose. But no, we haven't. It's amazing because of anybody in our family, he's the one with no issues.
right. But it's sort of, you know, it's very anxiety-provoking when that happens, you know?
Absolutely. And it was a huge journey for all of us because, for me, I always had this fear. It was sort of a recovery process for myself as well. I mean, the fear that, you know, when he did get better, it wasn't going to stick, or, you know, something would happen and he would regress, or, you know, maybe he would never get better all the way, or he would never eat a normal diet. And now that, you know, we're getting to be almost a year out from that, it's just becoming less and less a part of our lives. You know, I keep myself immersed in it to help other people and not forget where we came from. But for Caden, he doesn't remember that portion of his life. So,
right.
It's very interesting. When he first came out of it, he did talk about things when he couldn't talk, and when it seemed like he wasn't there, he was learning the whole time. When he finally could talk, he knew all of his colors. He knew all the letters in the alphabet. He could pick out almost all the states on the map. It was really quite amazing.
Wow.
Now, as he gets older, he does forget a lot about it.
Right. Max doesn't remember much, although he remembers little scenarios in nursery school where he was very upset and then couldn't express himself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
He will talk about how his brain works, which is kind of interesting. He'll say, well, you know, my brain sometimes will do this, and I'll be thinking about this, he'll say. And it is kind of funny, he said the other day, when we did the elimination diet, we were on a very strict diet, and I say we because I followed the diet while I nursed him for 2.5 years, and it was gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free, corn-free. It was also free of most fruits and vegetables because he did have phenol intolerance.
Oh, my God. So what did you eat?
Yeah, we ate about 8 different foods, which was peaches, pears, chicken, rice, pork, potato, and that's about it. I could make pancakes with all the alternate flours, and he did have an egg white allergy, so we couldn't use eggs. And I could make bread, and I could make waffles, and I made him crackers. And, you know, we basically ate chicken and rice on a daily basis. But it really, I think, helped clear his body. But he talks about it now. It's funny because I asked the other day, would you like a pear? And he said, you know, I really don't like pears. And I said, oh, you don't? And I said, I thought you loved pears. And he said, no. And he said, you know, as a matter of fact, that whole time, I never liked pears. I said, oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad that you told me. And you know what? You'll never have to eat another pear again if you don't want to.
That is funny.
He's sort of aware in that way. So,
like, you know, outline for us again, like, what were the most important treatments, and could you differentiate between their various effects?
I could, definitely, and I also kept very careful track with my log and kind of tracking on when we did interventions and what worked and what the results were and what didn't work, and tried to really space them out so that I was sure of what it was that was working and what wasn't working.
That's very important for parents to hear, because so many parents try, like, 5 things at once, and then you're completely confused about what's doing what.
Exactly. And it's difficult because you want to see improvements right away. And I felt very rushed. I felt, oh my gosh, if I don't recover him before he's 3 years old, he'll never be recovered. If I don't recover him before this age, he'll never be recovered. And, you know, as I went along, I kind of realized that he's kind of setting the pace, and it worked well for us to kind of take our time and to let the homeopathy work and to let the other things work. I would say, number one, the diet absolutely helped us because it helped clear his body of symptoms and get him to a place where his body was healthy. And I mean, he ate better than anybody I knew. Even though we had a very limited diet, he had, you know, 3 fruits, he had 3 vegetables, he ate proteins, he ate carbs, and it was, you know, a very clean diet, I'd like to say, and organic, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors. I mean, basically everything was made from scratch, and that helped absolutely tremendously. homeopathy, without a doubt. I always say the diet helped improve his health, but homeopathy brought him back to us and brought his personality back. Also, yeast treatments. We still maintain yeast treatments today. He does Culturelle as well as GSE, grapefruit seed extract. And those two are kind of opposite in that grapefruit seed extract kills off the bad bacteria and the Culturelle adds the good back in. He also does Probiol Gold, which is another good probiotic. And the yeast treatments definitely help maintain. I think if we cut back on yeast treatments, I see a little bit of the aggressive or hyper type behavior come back. And also no phenol enzyme. We do maintain no phenol enzyme. He barely has, I think, a quarter of a capsule once a day with a bite from one of his meals. And that helps tremendously reduce aggressive or defiant type behavior. Which, I mean, he has none of right now, but what's interesting is I ran out and I thought, oh, well, maybe he doesn't need it. So I didn't give it to him and I didn't see anything right away. But over the course of about a week or two, I noticed, you know, he started getting a little bit, he wouldn't have a full out tantrum, but he would get a little bit more aggressive. He would get a little bit more defiant with me, which is interesting to see that type of behavior as a cause and effect type thing. And as soon as we got him back on it, it disappeared. So those are the things that we do maintain.
What foods have the phenol in them?
Foods that are high, basically all fruits and vegetables have phenols in them. Mm. But the ones that are the highest are bananas, apples, I believe tomatoes are very high. Some people say bananas are, some people say they're not. I found them to be very high. Pears, some people say they are, and some people say they aren't. Peaches, and it depends on, you know, the child, really, on what's going to affect them. But one of the key indicators for us was red ears, red cheeks, and the aggressive tantruming kind of behavior.
Now, that's so interesting, because, you know, Max still gets red ears.
Oh, interesting.
And I've never done anything with it. I must admit, I've never, you know, done any dietary things like that, and maybe I'll explore that.
I have a friend who has a son who has Asperger's, very high functioning, and she tried her son on the no phenol, and it was amazing how it helped him. I think he didn't realize how often he had a stomach ache because he still had the bowel issues, and once she got him on the no phenol, it helped him tremendously, and it also helped him kind of personality-wise, too, like become a little bit more social, and maybe it was that he didn't feel well, so it was harder for him to, you know, communicate, but he also had the red ears and the red cheeks, and it helped a great deal with that.
Huh. I'm going to explore that, you know. He doesn't have any behavioral issues with it, but and we've always found, and I know that the red ears are common in autistic kids.
True.
So something to actually look into for me.
It's called PST deficiency, phenylsulfatransferase.
Okay.
And, I couldn't explain it technically for now, but if you Google that, there's some great information out there.
Okay. Great. See, you taught me something.
Oh, good.
So, like you talked about the peppermints.
Yeah.
Did you find anything else interfere with the homeopathic treatment?
For me, I definitely found that chocolate and coffee would antidote. But those are things, too, that I'm sensitive to as well. So it's hard to say. And I know there's, you know, talk about whether they really do antidote. Some people believe they do and some people believe they don't. And again, I think it's an individual thing.
Yeah, it's your own susceptibility.
Exactly. Exactly. We're very sensitive people as it is. So
yeah.
I think, you know, we're more susceptible to that.
So did he ever have any aggravations, worsening of symptoms?
He did. The very first remedy, the very first time we dosed, he did have an aggravation. And it was interesting to see it kind of evolve because what happened was we saw an increase of hyperactivity. We saw an increase in stimming. But then we saw him sort of take on different types of bowls. Like he started coloring, and he, at the time, was 18 months old. He would sit and color for an hour and a half, which for an 18-month-old is pretty unusual, I think. And, but, I mean, color these beautiful drawings with all these different colors and whatnot, but again, it was another type of stim, or maybe he was, you know, kind of introverting, I'm not really sure, but it was a change in his behaviors. And then we saw that really kind of subside. And I think with the DPT, again, we saw a little increase in stimming, or maybe a different kind of stimming come about. But it's interesting, too, is different foods would cause different stimming. Bananas would cause his drunken sailor walk, and corn would cause him to walk on his toes and spin and lick things. So it was really, you know, I could tell if he'd had an infraction in his diet by what he had eaten or what kind of stim he was doing.
How long would the aggravations last?
Not very long at all. I would say less than 2 to 3 days.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So, I was gonna ask something and I've forgotten. So, okay, so did you try anything that you found unhelpful?
You know, not that I can recall. I think, it's interesting. I definitely think his speech therapist was wonderful, and I think she helped him a great deal in trying to help him communicate. The week before he did the DPT remedy, we were working on the B sound, and we were absolutely delighted that the week before we got him to say buh. You know, we were doing buh and putting our hands up to our mouth. And then the next week after the remedy, he came back, and he greeted her at the door and said, "Hi, Becca." Almost fell over. And she came in and he showed her all his toys and talked about each one, and
she must have almost fallen over.
I could not believe it. And then that was followed by the developmental therapist, who came in and said, just sat there with her mouth hanging open and said, "I cannot believe this is the same child." It really was amazing. And
so I also asked, because everybody asked me, so you did not do any chelation?
We did not do any chelation. I always kept chelation kind of in my back pocket. I was never going to say no to chelation. I felt like I wouldn't consider him recovered until he could eat a normal diet and he didn't have any residual behaviors or issues. And so I kind of kept chelation in the back of my pocket. In the meantime, our homeopath, Nancy, was saying, "You're not going to need to chelate. You're not going to need to chelate." And that the homeopathy will allow his body to naturally chelate. And I think we've seen that happen.
Yeah, and I told you that too when you when you contacted me. I am curious. That's what I was going to ask about, the NAET. Can you describe it and say a little more about that?
Yes. If I pronounce it correctly, it's Nembutrapad Allergy Elimination Technique. And again, you could Google NAET. And so, again, some people say it works, some people say it doesn't. We definitely saw it work. And it's an acupressure type treatment, much like acupuncture, except for done without needles. I've actually had it done for myself for some of my food allergies. I've had it done for our new baby, who did have food allergies despite not being vaccinated. And we did do some for my 8-year-old daughter. But for Caden, it's allowed him to eat a normal diet with no issues. And I know it's worked because, number one, he had 2 gluten infractions after he'd been completely gluten-free for over 1.5 years. The first time, he developed aspiration-induced bacterial pneumonia after he ate a tiny crumb of an English muffin.
Wow.
Yeah, within 24 hours, which was very dramatic. We were back and forth to the hospital all weekend long. And then they, you know, gave him a nebulizer and all these things. And, I mean, he was having trouble breathing, and it was really very dramatic. And the second time, again, he developed the aspiration-induced bacterial pneumonia, but this time it was a puff of flour. I had pulled some beaters out from underneath the cabinet, and even though I had only used those beaters for gluten-free flours, there had been some flour down the bottom of our cabinet, and it puffed up in the air, and he breathed it in. And
that is sensitive.
Yes, again, within 24 hours, had pneumonia. And so we were so scared after we had treated gluten to give it to him. I sat across from him and gave him a cracker and just kind of sat there and looked at him, and he was looking at me like, "Mom, why are you looking at me?" And I said, "Well, I'm a little nervous for you to eat that cracker," but he ate the cracker with no problem. And we introduced it to his diet very, very slowly. And over time, I mean, now he eats absolutely everything. So
that is amazing.
It is. It really is. And I don't know how it worked, and I don't know why it worked, but for us, it has definitely worked.
Had you noticed, I'm just curious, with the homeopathy, were those allergies slowly declining or not? The food didn't help at all with before the NAET?
I would have to say no, only because, well, it's hard for me to say that because I kept him on the diet. I mean, he was very strictly on the diet until we started doing the NAET treatment. And so he didn't really have any, other than those gluten infractions, it was very rare that he would eat something that wasn't...
Right, so you didn't really test it.
Yeah, so I didn't really test it, so I guess it's not fair for me to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that I've been doing homeopathy now since he started, which was in 2001, and no, I'm sorry, 2002, and I still do have some of the food sensitivities as well, and our new baby has them as well.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I think eventually, with the right remedy, maybe there's some miasms there that need to be resolved, or
right.
you know, some type of layer that needs to be peeled back, or that it would help that, but I didn't see it for us.
Right, right. For Max, I feel he doesn't really have the food sensitivities anymore. We never did that, but I'm very curious about it, though.
Interesting.
How long? But Max was never as food sensitive as Caden was.
Right, right.
Like that. I mean, he was sensitive to milk, and I still have him on goat milk. But you know, like we ran out of goat milk, and he's been drinking regular milk all week. It hasn't bothered him.
Wow. Already. Wow.
Oh yeah, and when he goes to camp in the summer, he drinks, you know, the milk. None of us drink a lot of milk, I gotta
right.
say. If we drink a cup of milk a day, that's a lot. But
right. And see, we don't drink milk as a beverage. We drink mostly all water.
Yeah, us too.
I do let them have some organic juice to take the GSE, but we will have milk and cereal. We do have milk baked and things.
Right. That's the only time we drink milk and cereal. That's it.
And that was the other thing that we did that I think really helped him was we gave him sheep yogurt, which was definitely a good probiotic for him, and I think really helped him at a time when his diet was just at an all-time low. And, you know, there was just so many few things we could eat, and we found a sheep yogurt distributor nearby, and that made a huge difference, I think, for his gut as well.
And people talk about the raw milk, too.
Yes, and we do raw milk as well. We have a nice raw milk person nearby, and boy, it does taste different, that's for sure. I mean, I find it so much better than regular milk, but yeah, the raw milk I think definitely helped. I didn't see, though, before we did the Nate, we tried the raw milk and he still reacted to it.
Huh.
Because I have read on some of the other sites online some stories about people who have been able to introduce just raw milk to their child's diet and not have any problems with it. That was not the case for us. We did introduce raw milk before he did the Nate treatment, and he did react to it.
Huh. So do you use any allopathy at all with your kids?
Very infrequently. I can't even tell you the last time we went to the doctors. I took him in for an annual checkup last year just to make sure, you know, check his eyes and check his growth and that kind of thing. And they have not been, yeah, they haven't really been sick to go to the doctor for about a year and a half, maybe.
Yeah, I got to say that my boys now are 14 and 17. I think they went to the doctor once in the past 8 years or
wow.
something just for a checkup, and like every time she would go, I just can't believe what happened.
I know.
I mean, I think Max had been to the pediatrician maybe twice since
wow.
in the past 10 years since all this happened. Because
yeah,
yeah, like they just don't get sick, you know. And
true,
occasionally
true.
I'd have them have a checkup. They actually, you know, they have this little camp checkup from our osteopath.
Yeah.
Once
yeah.
a year, you know, he signs the form, so he'll take their blood pressure and listen to their heart and stuff. But
mm-hmm. It's funny. We did do cranial sacral therapy as well.
Oh, you did? Okay,
we
you
did
mention
and, you know,
it.
It's interesting. We started that well before we started the homeopathy or anything else, and I wouldn't say it was a tool for recovery, but I would certainly say it was a tool for good health.
Right.
I think it definitely helped him in that way, and everybody in our family does receive cranial sacral on a regular basis, but yeah, I mean, they really have not, they do get sick. I mean, I'm not going to say they won't get sick. They get the regular cold every once in a while, and but nobody in our family has had a prescription for anything since we started homeopathy. And, I mean, honestly, homeopathy has been an absolute miracle for our entire family. Even my husband is on a remedy, which that in itself is a miracle. And it's just done phenomenal things for us. I mean, it's hard to tell people until you experience it what it is. And just to know, you know, what our family has been through and the health that we experience now. And to me, it's reassuring to know that I have it. For example, my husband did get sick. He just traveled down to Florida and flew back, and he ended up getting that nasty coughing flu that's going around, and he was coughing so badly. And part of his constitution is that he refuses to say that he's sick. You know, I'm fine until it's too late. Well, then we found a good remedy for his cough, and he took it, and within 24 hours, he was much, much better. And then we kind of felt like, oh, maybe I'm coming down with it, and took a little bit of remedy, put it in water, took a tablespoon of it, and all of us fine. None of us have gotten it, and it's been well over 2 weeks, so.
Great.
In that way, too, you know, it's been just really amazing.
It's a real comfort, especially with all this, the flu, you know, the bird flu and all this stuff, all these scares.
Exactly.
It's this big, you have this something in your back pocket that you can just don't have to live in fear like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. It's really changed the way we look at health altogether, for me anyway, and what the root cause of it is and how it affects us and in so many different levels, you know, not just in getting sick, but also on a regular day-to-day basis, what our overall constitution is, our overall health is.
It's true. Everybody listen to that. So what would you think are the most important ingredients for your success with Kaden from the psychological point of view? This is also such an important factor for autism families because the whole thing is so unbelievably stressful.
Yeah.
And I know we've interviewed both Nancy, your homeopath, and John, our homeopath, uh-huh. on this show, and they both say that sort of the sort of psychological health of the family is one of the more important determining factors who's going to be successful and who won't be.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, everyone can understand where you're coming from that has a child with autism. But people who don't have children with autism cannot understand it. They just don't understand it. And we, you know, we just lose some friends along the way. And it was, as you know, it's difficult. You can't go out. You can't go places. You can't have play dates. And you know, your family as a whole kind of suffers from that. And then, of course, you know, your relationship with your spouse. I mean, I think it was 2 years that we didn't have sex. I mean, I know that's kind of personal, but it was so taxing and just not sleeping. And then all the hours that we spent, you know, researching and trying to help him. And, I mean, that was the core focus of our family for three and a half years.
And it's so hard on the other children, too.
It is. And I really felt like, you know, my 8-year-old, my daughter, kind of got put on the back burner for a while, and I think, you know, although she may not have seen it that way because she adores her brother, I certainly felt that, and I know that she must have felt it in certain ways. But it does. It takes a toll on your marriage. It takes a toll on your family. And also, too, with the recovery process, I mean, don't get me wrong, I am eternally grateful for everything that we have had happen to us in the long run, but I went through sort of a post-traumatic stress-like thing after Kaden had recovered, where I kind of let myself step away from it for a little bit because I was so immersed in it and just let him be and just let him be him and let him be recovered and try to stop worrying about it and try and just enjoy him, you know, for the way that he was. And it was hard. And it was hard to get past that fear of, you know, what if it comes back or, oh, you know, is he acting that way because of the autism or is he, you know, acting like a regular 3-year-old, you know, or it just, it really plays with your head. And I think number one is to try and get support through other parents, through other, you know, other people who've been through it, and try and stay close to your spouse and keep that communication open, because it is a journey. It's a long one, and it isn't easy, but it's the other side. Boy, it really just been, it's been a godsend in certain ways. You know, it's one of those blessings in disguise. I mean, I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but in the long run, our family is 100 degrees better for it.
You're much closer. I mean, it either splits you apart or pulls you together. And and the people who have, I mean, this is what homeopaths have told me, is that the families that can pull together, their kids do much better.
Yes,
so
definitely.
It's important for parents to attend to their own health and then also, you know, probably get homeopathic treatment, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the first things when we went to see Nancy was she started with treating me and said, you know, you grew him. He grew inside you. He is you. And it's true. You bring along that whole history and that family history. And in treating ourselves, and my husband treating himself and me treating myself, I mean, we're healthier, we're better, and we're coming from a totally different place than we were before, it just changes things. You know? And you also find out a lot about other people and who your friends are and who aren't. And you learn about your family along the way, too, and who you can lean on and who you can't. And that's hard in a lot of different ways. It's a very lonely process, very lonely process. And even when you get to the other side, sometimes it's kind of lonely. I mean, I don't feel, you know, I don't want to say I feel bad for myself because I don't, but I feel like people we were friends with before whose children have autism and aren't recovered, it's hard. And they've even told me this, it's hard for them to be friends with us now because Caden is recovered and their child isn't. Friends that we had before when Caden became autistic and they, you know, kind of dropped us off as friends for whatever reason, you can't really foster that relationship back up again. It's almost like moving to a new place and starting over. You know, we had moved to a new town. We hadn't been to story hour. And Caden was 3 and a half, and we went in to story hour, and they're like, oh, did you just move here? Well, 3 and a half years ago. So, yeah, it's a really different place.
Yeah. So what advice, this is my last question.
Okay.
What advice would you give to other parents who are now beginning on this journey?
I think most importantly, keep an open mind. Don't negate anything until, you know, you try it or you experience it. Stay to the course. I mean, I hear from parents all the time and time again, well, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try this, and then they give it up before they've given it up an opportunity to work. And again, I understand that because you feel like you don't want to waste time, but at the same time, you need to give things an opportunity to work, and have faith. You know, have faith in yourself and in your child, and in what you're doing for him or her. And that's all you can do. You know, and some people have great success right away, and some people don't have success. And you know, I would just say, keep trying if that's what's important to you. I mean, I have a lot of parents, too, who have emailed and then said, you know, I think I'm really happy with where we are, and that's only for them to decide, not for anybody else to decide. And just keep reading. I mean, it changes on a daily basis what's going on, and we just recently found out about the glutathione deficiency that's becoming more and more clear, that it's more and more common in some of these kids, and glutathione is kind of tied into the whole natural chelation process, and I did find out that I have difficulty with processing glutathione, and I'm at kind of a crossroads too. Like, okay, do I supplement glutathione as I would, you know, with a vitamin supplement, or you know, is that something that homeopathy will eventually address? But I guess my advice would be, you know, keep your doors open.
Yeah, and be patient.
Exactly, be patient.
Yeah.
Be patient.
So Erica, stay on. For a second, because I'm going to pause this, but I want from everybody. I know everybody thanks you for doing this interview with me.
Oh, thank you!
Because it's really helpful to others.
Great! I'm so happy to have the opportunity, and if it helps anybody, then it's well worth it.
Yeah. So hold on.
Okay.
Well, that's about all we have time for this week. We really went over time, I just want to close again by saying that all of you should visit the ImpossibleCure.com website. There's information about how to order my book, as well as lots of information about autism referrals and the Cure Stories database, and other pointers to other websites that will provide helpful information for you. So be well, and remember, there's truly hope with homeopathy, and happy St. Patrick's Day.